417 of the Inside Show podcast, where we're still inside and starting to maybe get a little tired of it. I mean, things are opening up a little more, but I just, you know, haven't started hanging out with friends in really any capacity, and mm-hmm. there might be some social distance barbecues in the future, but a lot of inside time. Got some stuff done around the house this weekend. And you'd think with the lack of things to do, I'd be on Instagram more, and I realized this morning after I shared something that the last one was May 29th. I'm like, I really need to, I don't know, just play my records more, pretend I'm listening to my records and share some, like, do something to keep the social media going. But...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to do when we're not, like, you know, getting a lot of new records in the mail or going to see concerts or, you know, whatever. It's like, I mean, I guess we could screenshot our phones of what we're listening to and post, but, like,
I've done that.
I never do that.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times, but, like, first of all, trying to screenshot, oh, I wasn't using the iTunes app or music app, but using the remote app, the screenshotting that does not work well, like, cut well to put into Instagram. But yeah, we'll have to do something stand there, but we're still here. We're still listening to new stuff and old stuff. And, I know next week, wait, what's today? I guess it's 2 weeks. The new, Lamb of God finally comes out. Mm-hmm. So we'll be reviewing that. And, I actually have to go through the June release list, which Nick and I get to do after we record. Woo! So we can pick what's coming up for you guys. This week, though, we do have three brand new ones. Two of these bands we have reviewed before, and we're going to continue our look into Southern Lord when it gets our Black Label segment. So the first one up is Ailstorm with their sixth studio album, Curse of the Crystal Coconut. It's out on Napalm. And I have such split feelings on this album.
Yeah? Okay.
Like, it's catchier than Syphilis. Like, uh-huh. It seemed appropriate for Pirates. It's super catchy. Like, musically, I really enjoy this album. It's so much fun. And the use of the period instruments, if you will, like, are worked in seamlessly like you'd expect from the band. They get a little heavy part, like some kind of chunky grooves and breakdowny parts and, you know, yelled vocals, and there's a lot of fun to be had. But at the same time, some of the fun is a little worn out. For instance, the lead track, Treasure Chest Party Quest, was fun the first few times, and the video was hilarious. But now I just don't care anymore. Like, the whole self-congratulatory song, like, it's already worn on me. I don't find it nearly as amusing. And we're going to play the song Zombies Ate My Pirate Ship, but I do have some fundamental problems with that song. Like,
zombies aren't real.
Yep, that's it.
That's it. Only problem.
No, actually, more the problem that the zombies ate the pirate ship. Why are they eating a pirate ship? Zombies don't eat pirate ships. They don't eat wood. Nope. And I'm not sure if I it. There's like an emotional aspect to that song that's doubled down by the female vocals in the end of it. But lyrically, it doesn't work. And I don't know if that's supposed to be funny or like they had the rest of it done and just didn't know what lyrics to apply to it. So they went with the zombie thing. Like the dichotomy of that just... I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Like, I generally speaking like the song, but I was like, does this really need the emotional depth for zombies eating a ship? And then there's Tortuga, which I'm sorry, I can't, that's unforgivable. I listened to it twice and every other time I skip that track. It's a rap song. They rapped. And I don't know if that's a different guy in the band rapping or they got a guest on the rap. For the second verse, I didn't actually look it up because I didn't care, but that was terrible. What I think actually made some of those things were in, like, see, and then you get like Shitboat. Some reason that's a music. I don't know if it's the rhyme or the rhythm of the song, but like, or the fact that it's less than 2 minutes. Actually, it's less than a minute and a half. But what I found almost problematic is my favorite song on here, Wooden Leg Part 2, The Woodening. And it's because I think that song is so good. I don't know if I love the, if it needed the little MIDI section, but like the story it tells works following up the second part of the song. They actually wrote, like, musically, it's epic. It has the build to the crescendo until the end where they kind of reprise the original song, but hilariously ending the story. And it's so good. It's keeps the Alestorm humor and, but kind of stepped up the writing almost, which again, we've seen writing like that earlier on. Earlier on, they weren't quite, they were self-aware, but weren't, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess it wasn't as brazen. I don't know. Like the early stuff, all this, you know, Wenches and Mead and all this stuff was there in the early albums, but it wasn't quite as ridiculous within context of Alestorm as it's become. And I think it kind of hit ahead here, but I can't help but get these songs stuck in my head.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Like, there has never been a time when I've been like, ah, oh, I'm in the mood for, you know, something heavy. Let me throw on Alestorm. Like, the lyrics match the mood I need to be in to listen to the band anyways, so I can't fault them for doing it. You are 100% right that it used to just be more like, you know, it was thematic the way that Amon Amarth was thematic. Like, it was based on, like, okay, well, here's the mythology we're pulling from, but we're going to craft, like, you know, good songs around that. And these guys have basically, over the course of the last 4 or 5 albums, gone, like, full Wilson mode with pirate themes. But, like, that's always been the humor and vibe that they have at their core. So, like, I'm okay with it. The lyrics are questionable. You're not wrong. But they're catchy.
Yep.
It's accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all fun. Even the parts that are, like, you're kind of like, ah, I don't want to like this. It's all enjoyable.
Absolutely.
So it works for me, and I don't dock them for that. That said, I totally agree. Wooden Leg Part 2 is easily the strongest song in this album, and it feels a bit more like their older stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, like, that's definitely... If that had not been on here, I think I probably would be rating the album higher, because it would have just been like, all right, this is the direction they're going, and it's all fun. And then they throw on, like, basically their epic masterpiece towards the end of it that's over 8 minutes long and, like, works really well. It's like, oh, all right, you had this in you, huh? And you also wrote Shipboat and Tortuga. I got it. Okay, cool. I still really enjoy it. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, Chomp Chomp is going to be so much fun live with everybody in the crowds chanting Chomp Chomp, and there's probably a giant alligator on the stage, I'm guessing.
Oh, there definitely will be, yeah.
Like, Fanny Balls, like I said, that word is obnoxious, but that song gets stuck in my head, and I'm, like, almost mad that it's in my head because I don't like the word, or the name, I guess it's supposed to be. So, like, that's the thing, I like this. I just feel like I shouldn't, and there's things about it I don't, but it forces me to enjoy it and remember it. So I guess that's a good on them.
Right. Yeah, I've been between a 3 and a 4 all week on this, because, like,
so have I.
We've been the last 2 4s, just for the record.
Okay.
And I don't think this is any worse than the last 2. It's just a little bit more, like, on the nose.
To me, that's worse. I think lyrically, it's a little... It's definitely overall worse than the last 2. Musically, it might arguably be better because of the sheer catchiness and the figuring out working the heavy riffs into there. Like, they pulled 2 aspects of the music into 2 different directions, and now I don't know how to grade this thing.
Yeah, I think I'm still going to land on a 4 and just, you know, kind of try to grab at each part of those and bring them back together a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I thoroughly enjoyed this. Like, I think I let it repeat, like, 4 times the first time I listened to this while I was out, like, building a deck, and I was like, yeah, you know what? This is fun for this. This is easy summer music to just kind of do a thing with.
Yeah. When I texted you, asked you if you had listened to, I think, the Wooden Leg Part 2, you're like, yeah, I ripped this a couple times this week. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay. So I think to give an overall score I'm happy with, I'm going to give it a 3. So it gets a nice 3.5. I think that's plenty fair for Curse of the Crystal Coconut, which is, by the way, worked into one song almost in passing. It doesn't seem to be really the point of that song. But at any rate, we're going to play you the tune Zombies Ate My Pirate Ship. Check it out. We'll be right back.
I thought Zombies Ate My Pirate Ship from Ailstorm off their latest Curse of the Crystal Coconut out on Napalm Records. Next up, we have another repeat listen for you. We have the latest from Caligula's Horse, Rise Radiant, out on Inside Out Records. We've reviewed these guys a couple times before, most recently episode 313 back in 2017 with their album In Contact. And before that was all the way back in 2015, episode 214 with Bloom, which was our, I think I can speak for both of us, was our introduction to this band.
Yes. I
was not really familiar with anything prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
We both landed on fives for that one. It was on our year-end list. In Contact, you were a three, I was a four. Generally felt it wasn't quite as heavy or as engaging as Bloom was. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to today with Rise Radiant. I think I'm probably going to end up giving this the exact same review that I gave In Contact. But in order to do that, I need to also say I have gone back to In Contact many, many, many times between when we reviewed it and today. And that album grows on me with every listen. So if I was to be rating that album now, I would probably be giving it a five.
Okay.
So where we see this band going is kind of hitting the heavy parts a little heavier, hitting the quieter parts a little bit more so. They're a little bit more spread out. They're a little bit more somber and melancholy. They have longer passages of quiet songs. A song like Resonate, you know, a few minutes or a few tracks into the album is all like bordering on acoustic. It might even straight up be acoustic, but I think there is a little bit of a program drum track in it. You get a lot more quiet moments on it, but the payoff when it hits heavier is really, really solid. Which I think is exactly what I said about In Contact. Like, I loved the heavy parts and I was kind of not engaged with the parts that weren't.
Right.
Going back to that, I find the rest of that album to be very, very good now. I think that applies to this one. I think if we were to be reviewing it in a year or so after I've listened to it more, I think, the quieter moments would have grabbed me and become more engaging. But now it feels like there are pillars to this album,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the stuff in between. It starts really strong. The first couple songs are great. And then you have a little bit of a dip. The song we're going to play you, I think, is a pretty strong one in the middle. The single off this is great. And then there's a gap, and it wraps up really well. So there's like, there's four songs on here, or maybe five songs that are really, really, really good. And then a few that are, they feel like filler tracks. So I think that lands me on a four again on this one because the strong moments are extremely strong. Yeah.
See, I'm gonna give this a four as well, where I think this reminded me more of like early Carnival, like right out the mm-hmm. gate. And I think I was at the time comparing In Contact possibly unfairly a little too much to Bloom. I mean, obviously we do that, but I liked the heavier aspect of Bloom. But I think here where they get a little heavier, it's the instruments are tuned a little heavy, but they don't try to be aggressive. And even the heaviness is like almost muted sound in the way the production and the tuning stuff is. It works. So I think
yeah.
having the constant really nice clean vocals and not trying to be aggressive with the little bit of weight they add to it makes the valleys of this album, if you will, the quieter moments smoother. Like it transitions much better. And even those are really well written. And I think just the writing is better on this. It feels more confident in the direction that they were trying to go with In Contact. I feel this is like what they were going for. But while that didn't resonate quite as much with me anyway, this really did from the get-go. It's also we haven't listened to something this mellow in a while, it feels like, in sharp contrast to a lot of other things. I mean, this was kind of a wild week musically, but
this was a very wild week. Yeah. I think maybe for me, like, I would have liked to see the tracking a little different, because a song like Salt that is almost 8 minutes long is track three. So you come in on two like standard fare Caligula's Horse, really good, solid kind of off kilter tracks. And then you get this almost 8 minute long generally quiet, slower song, followed by Resonate, which is an acoustic track, followed by Ocean Rise, which is also the other most mellow song on the album. So, like, you just kind of get these three in a row that are the definite lull of yeah. the entirety of the album, which felt like a little weird to, like, come out swinging, mellow real hard for a good chunk of the album, and then bring it back for a strong ending. If you had kind of split those up a little bit, I think I probably, it would have grabbed me a little bit more immediately.
Yeah, and that's fair. At this, on the other side of the coin is I feel that Salt, Resonate, Ocean Rise, like, they flow together themselves.
They do.
So, like,
yeah,
they were damned either way, I feel like. You would have had, like, you know, loud, quiet, or just have all the quiet in the middle. So, I mean, yeah, I for me, it worked this way. And again, I think just the, I don't know why it, I was going to say resonated with me because I saw it there again. And I know I said that before. You I'm did. Not trying to be punny. But this, I think this hit me better. I don't know if it was the writing or just being so far separated from In Contact, but I did really enjoy this. It's very well written, and I know they're from the same country, and you know, Circle is Carnival, Dead Letter Circus, so those comparisons are always going to be there amongst these bands. But
yeah,
to me that was, I meant that as a compliment, that it sounded like earlier Carnival, like, well, not first right, album,
the Carnival that we liked the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like,
yeah,
that was a nice kind of in for me. So yeah, this is definitely getting a 4 from me.
I feel like these guys have a more of a staying power than the other bands of their ilk from that same part of the world. Like, Carnival hit hard and then ended on kind of a sour note and hasn't done anything about that yet. And Dead Letter Circus gets a little worse with every single album they release. whereas these guys are at least on par, if not improving, with what they do. Like, you know, I fully think that if we... By the time we talk about the next Caligula's Horse album, I'll be saying I should have given this 1 of 5. I totally expect that's where that's going to go. What I need to do is get past the point where I'm listening to, like, the flow and melody of the song and get familiar with them enough that I'm listening to what the rhythm section is doing. Mm-hmm. Because the interplay between the bass player and the drummer in this band is fucking incredible, and it always has been. But I need to, like, process the rest of the song before I can just, like, do full listens only paying attention to that. And that is what shifted me on In Contact. Like, there are some moments on that where the songs I didn't think were all that interesting or great for a few of them, but then paying attention to, like, just focusing in on one instrument or one particular, like, interplay totally opened that album up to me. And I fully expect that's what's going to happen with Rise Radiant as well.
Yeah.
But either way, this is a really, really solid album. It's a 4 for both of us. I know I'm going to be listening to it a shit ton more. So with that, we're going to play the song Ocean Rise for you from Caligula's Horse's latest, Rise Radiant. It's out Inside Out. Check it out.
Weave away, beg the illness, plead for stillness. Oh,
So that was Ocean Rise by Caligula's Horse. It's off their latest album, Rise Radiant, out now on Inside Out Records. Let us know what you think of this, or Ailstorm, or any of the upcoming things we're going to talk about over on thesideshowpodcast.com or Facebook or Instagram or wherever you want. We're happy to chat metal and other things. Hit us up. And also, if there's some label you want to check out, us to check out for maybe our next black label, or a band you'd like us to feature, or whether it's your band, your friend's band, or something we're just not seeing in the release schedule yet, tips are welcome. With that, we're at our black label segment, where we are featuring Southern Lord. They've been around for 22 years now. We discussed some of this last week, but just to recap, they've been around for about 22 years now. They're started off mostly in the stoner doom drone genres, but have expanded to some hardcore, some metalcore, some progressive stuff, some black metal, a little bit of anything that they like and want to feature. I mean, that's
as any good label should
do. Yeah, I mean, that's not how it works, but yeah, as any good label should do, it seems fair. I mean, they were pretty pigeonholed early on, and you know, they still feature a lot of those types of artists, and I think it's kind of synonymous with Southern Lord at this point, which is fair and good for them. It's a good home for that type of stuff. So they have released done some reissues and some kind of special releases throughout the years, and one of the ones that were they were really excited to have done was Probot album back in 2004. Which makes sense, because I remember getting the promo of that in college. I like distinctly remembered that album on the slip sleeve, that cover on the slip sleeve. So that was Dave Grohl wrote that and was main performer on it. But they had the likes of King Diamond and Kronos from Venom, and Eric Wagner from Trouble, and Scott Wino and Lee Dorian and fucking Lemmy from Motorhead. Like, that had to be kind of crazy for the label to like logistically put together, but I can only imagine they're like being able to do that when they're what, about 6 years old as a label. Like, that's pretty huge that Dave Grohl comes. Yeah. Granted, you know, 16 years ago, Dave Grohl wasn't quite, he was a big deal, but he wasn't the Dave Grohl we love now, or at least he wasn't as popular anyway. Still, big deal. The way the label picks things is like how you'd expect any label to, is things they like, but they kind of go an extra step, at least they say. So, in an interview a couple years ago for the 20th anniversary, Greg Anderson had said that it's an extreme honor to work with the bands, release the records, and work hard with them in getting their music out there. When people can actually connect with it and love the band, that's a really great feeling for me, because honestly, when we put out an album, the intention is somewhat selfish. It's not necessarily to put out a record for the band to be really popular and successful. The intention is, wow, I really like this band. I like their music. I want to be a part of this. Of course, we hope that people will like the record, but that's not necessarily the intention. And if it doesn't happen, which happens very often with our stuff, there's a lot of records we've released that aren't very successful or popular. It doesn't make them any less important in my eyes, which, that's pretty cool to hear, because
yeah, for sure.
I mean, you'd hope, especially at metal labels, even the bigger metal labels, that's the reason they're signing a band. They still love the music. They love to hear this band. They think other people should. Obviously, there's a financial component even over at Southern Lord, but you don't really hear that quite as bluntly said. And you hear that's how stable labels started out. They put out their friends' music and like, oh, I can do this. But like, that's kind of why Nick and I do this show. We like finding the new music. And while some of the stuff we may not love, we do especially enjoy putting out there what we do find is great, especially the Bandcamp picks we had done for a couple of years, really. We had gimmicks with them, but we picked the best one because we felt like that should be known and we want everyone else to hear about it. Right. So it's relatable. We just don't actually release, you know, our other people's music. So,
right. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's really refreshing to hear from them. So to give you a sample of something newer that the labels put out, They, on May 29th, they released the album Años en Infierno from Exalba. And this has elements of doom in it, but it's, there's also death and death metal and hardcore, and it's a very caustic and heavy album, but it also knows how to, like, kind of stomp out and...
Yeah, this feels more like it has something in common with the likes of a Sepultura than a Doom album, which, you know, when I think Southern Lord, as we've talked about this week and last week, we generally think more of the roots of where they came from and, like, what we played, you know, last week when we did this, or 2 weeks ago. I'm going to do that forever. Yeah. You know, we generally have more of that, like, Goat Snake sort of impression of them, but then you get something that's more akin to, like, a Sepultura, kind of groovy, heavy, just thick, dense output, and that's what you get with the likes of this. Just variety, for sure.
Exactly. So with that, check out the title track of the album Años en Infierno by Exalba.
That wraps up our Black Label segment with Southern Lord. We'll be coming out with a new label in a couple weeks. We haven't picked that yet, so if you have any that you'd like to see us check out, feel free to shoot that over to either of our email addresses found at thesideshowpodcast.com, or leave a comment on any of our social media, and we'll definitely check that out. Last album this week, we have a newcomer, and I mean that in a couple ways, and that is with Astral Born, with their album Eternity's End out on Prosthetic, both new for us and a new band on the scene. This is a three-piece melodic death metal band from Ohio. It's their debut that they put out, we're assuming based on our little bit of research on Metal Archives, independently in 2019, and then got picked up and re-released via Prosthetic, you know, just recently. Mm-hmm. This is extremely solid, especially for a three-piece debut. This brings a lot to the table.
Yeah.
I have a couple little quibbles with it, but they're very minor, and I think they will probably all be addressed by album two. The biggest with that is there's a little bit of... there are moments on this album that feel like they are writing riffs as a different band. There are like a few moments where like, this sounds like a Monomarth. Like this has some definite Viking metal sort of vibe to it, but that is not generally what the rest of the album feels like. There's just a couple moments that are, while still extremely enjoyable, a little bit different, a little bit like jarring isn't the right word, but I noticed them every time because they didn't quite fit in with the rest of how it flowed. And my only other quibble with it is, as a three-piece, it means there is one guitar player, and like everything on this is guitar harmonies, and they're great guitar harmonies. They're awesome, and it sounds great, and I love it. But if I went to go see them play live, not that we can do that this year, if I saw this live and they didn't have the harmonies, I'd be a little bit bummed out, because that is such like a component of what all of this is, that I feel like they would do really well to find themselves a fourth member or just a touring guy before they go on the road. And maybe they have that lined up and this is all for naught. but that, to see it live and not get the presentation that is delivered on the album, would definitely be a little bit of a bummer. Otherwise, the writing on this is extremely solid. The guitar riffs are incredible. The drumming is superb. It's a really, really solid effort that I can't be like, other than a couple moments where it sounds like a Monomarth, I'm not listening to it and being like, oh, it's this band. It's this band, which I feel like so much of Melodic Death, we can very easily be like, it sounds exactly like, you know, this one that came 20 years ago sort of thing, because it's a pretty tried and true genre. And there are definitely, you could pick up a whole bunch of elements of this and say it sounds, you know, like, you know, similar riffs to this in the vein of whatever, but there's not like an A to B comparison for me that this sounds like. And that's very rare with Melodic Death these days. And they nailed it. Like, I really, really enjoy this. And for a debut, it's fucking excellent.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the at least half these members are, or two thirds, have experience in Hammer Horde, which the drummer and guitarist are from that band, which, you know, being kind of the Viking battle metal realm of there, would explain the Monomarth, as we used, influence. But still, I totally agree with you. It's extremely impressive debut. And being influenced by, you know, Sweden's melodic death metal heyday is obvious, but you can't just say, oh, they're in flames, they're so, because they're not. And but they understand the guitar harmonies that made those bands so enjoyable to listen to, especially again in the heyday. And they show it off here in spades. It's what it just makes it catchy. It makes it memorable. And the production, there's a one slight fault in the production, which I can't not mention momentarily, but the production is otherwise, it's wide and the guitars stand out. Guitars. So like you can hear the split. Everything has its space. They're in the front, but not generally in front of the vocals where they should be. The drums punch. So like it works for the style of music. Production faux pas. It's in the song Architects of Suffering. I don't know what happened there, but the vocals get a little buried under it. And I notice it every time. Like my head turns. I'm like, I'm not streaming this. I know that's not the issue. Like I get it. If they were doing this on their own, like I'm not knocking them, but it's also like, it bothers me every time. I also have to say for me, and I'm surprised you didn't mention this, I had to adjust to the vocals on this album because they're growing on me, and there's nothing inherently wrong with the more guttural nature of the vocals, but they didn't seem to fit. Maybe it's because I was with the music, I was expecting something a little more mid-range. But ultimately, like, if, again, they grew on me. I think, in my opinion, a different style might have worked better, but
see, I'm gonna push back on that. I definitely noticed them, and at first it was a little like, it's not what you expect when you think melodic death metal, but I think that also helped lend it to not feel pigeonholed to sound like so many of you know, their contemporaries in the genre, like, there is something right out the gate that this sounds different. This makes you think a little differently. And it's not a bad vocal delivery. It's just a little bit different. And, like, that worked for me. It definitely took a song or two to kind of, like, sit with that. But I like the vocals. I like his voice. It works. It's not what you expect over this music. And I kind of enjoy it.
Right. And that's why it grew on me. But I still think sometimes it didn't connect with the music as well as it could have. And again, it's the first album. So, like, that's something when you said in the beginning of your review, like, any little quibbles we have will most definitely be fixed on next album. That's one of those things that I feel like the vocal connection to be there. Maybe it's a production thing. Maybe it's the tone and the writing. I don't know. But, like, I was just listening to what I think it was a verse in Transcendence of the Flesh. And it was like, it just didn't gel. Like, but the song is great. Like, this album is excellent. And I do overall enjoy the vocals. I think, like you said, it does take getting used to with it being different, but yeah, that's again my little like nitpick on it. It's a fantastic album from a band that definitely understands melodic death metal and not how to just retread everything that's been done.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So numbers. I'm a 4 on it. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's a really really solid starting point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. It's a 4. And I this is something where I could see potential in a 5 for the next album. And I look forward to the follow-up to Eternity's End, which will, unless something really bad happens, should be out on Prosthetic Records, as this album was. We're going to play you a song at the end of the show. We kind of really just said how to get in touch with us and the website and all that stuff. So, like, hopefully you haven't forgotten to go to thesideshowpodcast.com and connect everything there. Shop on Amazon. If you're shopping on Amazon, go through our site first to click any of the album arts there to get there, and it helps us keep everything up and running. Yeah, we have to go figure out what the hell we're reviewing next time and what label we're going to feature in Black Label. So we got some work ahead of us. We're going to go figure that out. You're going to listen to The Obliterators by Astroborn off the album Eternity's End, and we'll see you next time.